Line, Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studio, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Now, joining us a day later because of the NFL draft is Elliot Friedman of the 32 Thoughts podcast and Sportsnet. Elliot, appreciate you for joining us and appreciate your flexible schedule. I think one series that I've been following and honestly love watching so far is the Avalanche Kraken series. Did not think we'd be able to get to game six. What's your interpretation of that series and kind of the temperature in Colorado now that Seattle leads 3-2 and could take it tonight?
You know, Carolyn, I agree with you going in. I thought it was a great accomplishment for Seattle to make the playoffs. I didn't see them winning this series, to be honest, going in. And I thought if they kept it competitive, it would be a victory. And then a couple of things happened. Number one, their goalie, Philip Grubauer, has had the biggest difference between the regular season and the playoffs in terms of his play. No goalie in the league has raised their level higher in the postseason than the way he played during the year than Grubauer has. And that's obviously been a huge difference. But the other thing is, you know, like when Jordan Eberle scored in overtime to win game four and tied the series at 2-2, I think that's when Seattle went from, okay, it's great to be here, to, you know what, we can win this. And even missing a 40-goal score due to injury in game five, I thought they were excellent on the road. I thought, you know, they took the best that Colorado could throw at them. I thought they played really comfortably, really poised. Like, this is not a fluke. They have earned their lead. Colorado, you know, they'll have Makar back tonight from the suspension. You watch, he'll be the best player on the ice. But they're a bit thin. Landeskog is out. Nichushkin, we have a bit more clarity here, but I don't think we're going to see him anytime soon. You know, Colorado, like, Seattle doesn't have Colorado's top-end talent, but they do have a lot of depth. They're very fast, and their goalie's playing out of his mind. They have a shot to wrap this up tonight, but I agree with you. Anyone who says that they saw Seattle convincingly winning this series, they're a liar.
Elliot, just to follow up, you mentioned Nichushkin, of course, and Makar got suspended in there, but the Nichushkin thing, I just wonder how that weighs on a team when just something like that happens in the middle of a series. Of course, based on what's been reported.
I think it's got to be a shock, right? Like, he played the first two games. I think he scored the winning goal in game two, and you're preparing for game three, and that kind of happens on a game day. I think it would throw anyone. And you know, the Avalanche are being very careful here not to say anything. They're not discussing it really one way or the other, except, you know, basically saying that they said it wasn't a police investigation. He's not suspended. But other than that, we're not getting much insight into how they feel. I'm sure we will once this is all over. But I can't imagine how that wouldn't throw a team, because he's not one of your best players. Like, they have the elite of the elite there, but he's a very important part of what you do. And he was going to be even more important this year because their captain is out and won't play in the playoffs. So I can't think about how that wouldn't affect the team, both in terms of trying to understand what happened, and all of a sudden he's not in your lineup.
Yes, no question. So last night, Elliot, as you can imagine around here, there was a ton of attention focused on the NFL draft. But I did, just on a side note, D-Mace, you'd appreciate this. In the last couple of podcasts for Elliot, he's thrown out some football references with Earl Campbell, and then this morning it was Chuck Foreman.
All right.
Oh, that's going deep right there. That
Elliot,
was pretty solid.
Like my 1970s
right there. Running back. Like
my 70s, yeah. Early 80s running backs. That's good stuff. But Elliot, last night, a lot of Predator fans may not have, you know, they might have fallen asleep and not seen this, but when Winnipeg was eliminated, their coach Rick Bowness really laid into him. Like, it could have been hey, we'll talk about this later, and you know, our guys battled, we didn't get it done. But man, he made a point to just light them up for just the quote he kept using was no pushback. So it looks like it's going to be a pretty tumultuous offseason in Winnipeg.
Well, first of all, let me just say, from what I understand, you can never go wrong with, like, third-generation offensive tackles out of Northwestern. I think that sounds like that was a pretty good pick.
Yeah, his name is Skoronski. He just sounds like he could be a good offensive lineman.
Can't not be good.
Yeah, like, you know, the team that drafted, like, Matthews and Munchak, I think they've got to know what they're doing there, hopefully. You know, I think, like, so Bonus got up there, and he spoke for 62 seconds. And anytime it basically starts with no questions, good, because people are waiting to say something, like, 9 times out of 10, if the coach starts with that, you know you're getting a heck of a press conference. And this was not on the lines of Jim Mora saying playoffs, but it was like that. And
playoffs.
So they had a game. Yeah, it was close. It wasn't quite that, Carolyn, but it was close. So they had a game about 3-4 weeks ago. They lost late in the season in San Jose, and Bonus really ripped into them. He was angry, and he really ripped into them. And so this is the second one in a month. And any time you get something like that, you know that there's issues. Now, the thing here that kind of surprised me a little bit about it is the Jets had some real serious injury problems. They lost their number one defenseman in game three on his second shift of game three, and they played really hard in that game. They were down 4-1 and lost in a fluke bounce in double overtime. In game four, they lost their number one center, Mark Scheifele, to an injury on the second shift. They played hard. They lost, I think it was 4-2, the last goal in empty netter with 15 seconds left. But last night, they weren't good. And they gave up a goal in the first minute of the game. They gave up another goal in the first minute of the second period where Mark Stone, the Vegas captain, basically walked through four guys. And you could see the shots of Bonus on the bench. He was really boiling. And you could see that this was coming. I wasn't expecting that, but you could tell he was mad. The thing that's interesting about the Jets is they have some really key players, Scheifele, Pierre-Luc Dubois, their other top center, their goalie, Connor Hellebuck, who had a great year. They're all heading into the last years of their contracts. And I think there's a decent chance that the Jets are going to move on. And they're gonna blow up their core and basically start trying to put together a new group. And, you know, I think people in Winnipeg have been wondering if they were going to do that. I think the message after that game last night is that's absolutely going to happen. So you're going to hear a lot of wild speculation about what the Jets are going to do.
How stunned are you about how much the Devils have shut the Rangers down after the first two games where they couldn't stop them? They've gone from that to the other extreme where the Rangers are now going three games and are really having trouble getting anything.
Yeah, I'm really surprised. I mean, the swing in that series has been incredible. And, you know, like, so last night the Devils were up 2-0. They took a penalty. The Rangers were on the power play and they scored shorthanded. And someone sent me a note saying, like the Devils looked like they believed they were going to score. Even though the Rangers had the man advantage, they were so confident. You know, the wild thing is the Devils lost the first two games at home. They were going back to Madison Square Garden. They put in a goalie for his first playoff game ever, and he's been fantastic. Like, it was a really gutsy decision by the coach and the organization to make that change. And since then, they've won 3 in a row, and they look so much more confident. The thing that the biggest change in that series, guys, is that the Rangers killed the Devils on the power play in the first two games. The Devils have come back, and they've shut it down. And without that, the Rangers are really having trouble scoring.
Last night, for people that weren't paying attention, Toronto had a chance to close out the Tampa Bay Lightning. So there is still a scenario where the Lightning and the Avs are both out in the first round, which would be a pretty big story and really a champion for those that are like, just get into the playoffs and anything can happen. But so Toronto, we kind of get to the Toronto meter with you. It's always fascinating to me. So what's the thought going on the road? Is it almost better in some ways that they're on the road in game six?
Probably. I mean, like, This is where the where the Toronto meter is right now, Willie. It's this simple. Yesterday, I live near a high school. I walk around the neighborhood quite a bit. They were so confident. They were like I have people saying to me, like, the Leafs are going to win 5-1 tonight. And I'm like, are you guys nuts? Like, 5-1? Like, you guys are crazy. No, they're done. They're done. And, you know, obviously Tampa came out and played a great game and won. Like, I think here it doesn't take a lot for the nerves to get frayed. You know, I live in a city where they haven't won a cup since 1967. And many of those defeats along the way have been very painful and, quite frankly, almost unbelievable. So it doesn't take a lot for them to get worried. I think they're in a pretty good spot. I mean, obviously they're up 3-2. I think the other thing too is the faster this series goes, the better it is for Toronto in terms of pace. They have to play at a fast pace. And last night, Tampa dictated it. They slowed the game down. They really didn't let Toronto get going. And Vasilevsky, I didn't like the goal he gave up, but after that, he was spectacular. Like, that's if Tampa gets good goaltending and slows down the pace, they're going to be okay. I still think Toronto is going to win the series, but on the nervous-o-meter, let's just say in this city, it's ratcheted up a couple notches after.
Man,
last
I don't blame him. I don't blame him. I'm sure the fingernails are getting very, very short now that the series is coming down to the last few games. Elliot Friedman, football extraordinaire. Appreciate you for joining us. Enjoy the games this weekend.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Awesome. Thanks, Elliot. You too. Elliot Friedman of the 32 Thoughts podcast and Sportsnet. A day later, appreciate him being flexible with our NFL draft schedule. We've been breaking down what Houston did with number 2 and kind of how the Tennessee Titans fell into place with a bidding war with the Houston Texans. And I have a thought about how possibly that may have come to be. We'll get into that coming up next. And, of course, we are right back into your phones coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game. We've got Ask D-Mace in just over 10 minutes, so get those questions in for D-Mace.
Please do.
It's been a day, and I know you'll have some questions for D-Mace. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Get those calls and texts in for D-Mace. And do not miss Nashville's best NFL draft coverage on 1025 and 1063, The Game. You can join me, D-Mace, and Chris Sanders on location tonight as we broadcast live for day 2 of the draft. We'll be out at the Inglewood Wingstop located at 3300 Gallatin Pike, where flavor gets its wings. The first 100 people to stop by during the draft will receive a coupon for 5 free boneless wings for their next visit. So one of the biggest conversations of the day is what happened with number 3? What happened with the Houston Texans? Let's go back like a month, month and a half, 2 months ago. Everybody thought it was going to be Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, 1-2, 2-1, whatever it was going to be, and in some sort of combination of the
right,
two.
Right, which I said, and you guys started throwing D-Mace.
Uh-huh.
Remember, I told you, I would come clean if they didn't take a quarterback with the second pick. I would have said, I salute you. But now I'm just going to say that I've been telling you guys all along, they were going to take a quarterback at 2.
The Titans might have expedited them taking a quarterback.
Okay. I think they expedited the process.
I don't believe so.
But all of the subsequent conversation came out from Adam Schefter when he was on NFL Live. I'm willing to bet you anything that those quarterbacks won't go in the top 3 or the top 4. I'm willing to bet you anything that Houston's not taking a quarterback at 2. John McClain said, I'm buying that they're not taking CJ Stroud at 2. I think they're taking Tyree Wilson at 2, which we've learned that Tyree Wilson probably wasn't even in the mix for the Texans anyways. But my point being, it went from the Texans are taking either Bryce Young or CJ Stroud or whatever quarterback is available to very dramatically shifting to the Texans aren't taking a quarterback at 2. And I that may have been the truth. It may have been a total smokescreen, a masterclass of smokescreens by the Houston Texans.
What's more likely?
Well, this is
it was
is
a total smokescreen by the Texans.
Maybe so.
Yes.
Maybe so.
Much more likely.
Maybe so. But I think that I look at D'Amico Ryans, a defensive guy who knew what he could do in San Francisco with that defense. And he said, look, I want to build up my defense. And then you may, once all of those talks got out about the Houston Texans not taking a quarterback at two, I'm sure that sent shockwaves throughout the entire fan base. What do you mean you're not taking a quarterback at two? We don't want Davis Mills to be our pick of the future. And Michael Lombardi kind of explained why, if the Texans, and this was pre-draft, that he thought if the Texans did take a quarterback at two or high in the draft, that this could have been the reason why. This was Michael Lombardi on the GM Shuffle podcast.
On our grading system that we started in Cleveland in 91, Levis is a 59. He's a backup player who's going to be, you know, he's going to be in the bottom. You can't grade him that way. You could see him somewhere else, but on a lot of boards, I bet he's a 59. And then you've got to be really careful and comfortable that you can get him in and develop him. That's a challenge.
And I'm going to read the description of a 59 player. This is 5.9 because you mentioned backup player. But just to give folks just sort of a glimpse about what this actually means, here it is. Career number two, backup quarterback with a developmental ceiling. Scout must define his ceiling slash reason that will not allow him to develop into a good quality backup or win with starter. This player may have one or more good level or better positional skills, but has at least one critical factor with a defined ceiling that will block his ability to ascend. What is that for Levis that you think is that's going to kind of block
poise.
His ability?
Poise. Decision-making in a critical time.
Okay, there was another part in that podcast, and we'll get into Will Levis and you know, him still being available, which is a huge shock of the draft. I would say the biggest shock of the draft this year. But Michael Lombardi went on to talk about Houston and the quarterbacks and how we knew that number two was going to dictate a good bit of the draft. And he said, you know, Houston, a lot of owners, Houston's not alone in this, but Houston's owners are one of those owners that listens to the fans. They get the temperature of the fan base. And if the fan base kind of, you know, reared their ugly heads and said, no, we need a quarterback, that the owner could have heard that and told Miko Ryans and told Nick Caserio, no, we need to take a quarterback. I don't know what Houston's plans were. I do think that there is a good bit of truth to the Texans originally not wanting to take a quarterback at number two, but I wouldn't be surprised that if ownership had a little bird in the ears of the fans and told Nick Caserio and Miko Ryans, we need that quarterback. The fans want their quarterback.
Pure speculation.
It is.
So is that a
I'm
smart way?
I'm not denying it's speculation.
Is that a smart way? If you were the GM, is that what you would do to make the pick? As important as that pick, would you listen to the fans? Would you listen to the noise that everybody's throwing out there? Or would you just be true to your board and your evaluation of the quarterback? What's a better way to
Owners
go?
Owners and GMs think very differently. The owners could think of it like, we need butts in those seats. We
yes.
need people
and,
to buy
and look,
tickets.
We're living
and
in a city where
tickets.
Bud Adams went to Floyd Reese and said, mm-hmm. you're drafting Vince Young. I mean, that's he did that. So we know that that has happened before. Yeah. But we have zero evidence that that happened here. I just say most of the time, if an owner has a brain, you're not just saying, well, you know, Adam Schefter or pick whoever. They said this. This is really interesting. I'm going to go to my GM and tell him that, I'm going to listen to those guys and don't listen to our scouts and the people I hired to make the pick. So I'm much more inclined to say they liked C.J. Stroud all along. They looked at what they needed to get Stroud and Will Anderson, and they had the cards. Mm-hmm. They had the draft capital to do it, and they did it. And it's not that exciting. It's smart use of your assets to me.
Yeah, I mean – yes, it is. I just like to, you know, I like to look at things, you know, sort of from both point of views. That's why I said, listen, in this situation, we don't know who's right and who's wrong. But what we can do is, based on the information that has been coming out, whether it came from the Titans, whether it came from Arizona, whether it came from Houston, hell, it could have come from the Cincinnati Bengals. We don't know. But the information came out. So there is a possibility, you know, I don't know how high the possibility is, but there's a possibility that could have affected Houston in regards to what they wanted to do. Not necessarily the players they wanted, but how they were going to take those players. In their mind, they probably always wanted to have both, you know, C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson or Will Anderson, C.J. Stroud, it doesn't matter.
But the path to getting exactly. those two may have been different than
Absolutely.
Actually what happened.
But then once this information started coming out, then that maybe they had to change, you know, the way they approached it, knowing that they had these picks in their pocket from the Deshaun Watson deal that they can put in a package to try to move up to that third spot. So they're thinking, okay, we'll just go ahead and get C.J. Stroud, because we know that if we don't get C.J. Stroud and we get Will Anderson, which we want, and he might be number one on our board, but it's going to end up costing us if we try to move up to get Stroud. If we try to move up to get Anderson, it's not going to cost us as much. So let's get Stroud now and still move up in the draft to get Will Anderson. It's going to cost us, but it's not going to cost us as much, because there's no bidding war now. The Titans are out.
And yeah, but once you don't take Stroud at two, you are not getting Stroud. And you know
you may,
that.
You may not. You don't know if you're not getting them, because you still made the move to get to number three, right?
I think the fact that they made the move to get Will Anderson at three,
that's telling you something.
That they wanted Will Anderson.
Yeah,
they
absolutely.
Weren't willing to wait on Will Anderson. They weren't willing to trade to five to get Will Anderson. They were no, because if they just wanted a good defensive player, I mean, they could have gotten Tyree Wilson. They could have gotten Jalen Carter. They wouldn't have had to give up as much draft capital as they did in order to get Will Anderson. That was their guy.
You're making that assumption. We don't know that, but.
We're all making assumptions here, Willie. That's all
I'm not making any assumptions. I'm saying, though, if you wanted Stroud and Anderson, you had to make a deal. You couldn't risk letting one of them float because somebody was going to trade up for number three.
Exactly.
So they said, look, I don't care if it's the Titans or anything else, whatever information. We know if we want Stroud and Anderson, we can go get them. So let's make the deal with Arizona because we have the draft picks to do it. And so that's it. That takes the Titans out. They didn't have what the Texans had to offer.
But obviously there was something, because here's another thing. The tweet that Russini put out and then subsequently retracted tells us a lot. That what she put out there, there had to be some truth to it, because no more than 5 minutes later, she retracted that whole tweet.
Oh, I think it's very true that the Titans were poised to try to grab the three pick.
Mm-hmm.
I think that looks pretty
I think
obvious.
That's obvious, yeah.
Yeah. But all I'm saying is the Texans held the leverage. They had the ability to do what they wanted to do, and it was nothing the Titans could do about
and
it.
And
we don't
know
what they wanted to
exactly.
do. They
but
could have wanted to take Will Anderson at two.
But here's the tweet that I'm referring to, and I don't know if our listeners have seen this, but Diana Russini tweeted out that the Houston Texans just made a wild move. The Titans were fighting to get to three, but once Houston picked C.J. Stroud at two, the Titans pulled their offer from Arizona. Then she quickly removed that tweet, because there had to be some truth to that tweet.
Yeah.
But she removed
but
it.
But
so it's telling you, but it's telling you that the Titans wanted to move up, which was coming out of somewhere. It was coming from somewhere.
I'm not really disputing that. I think they very well
so Houston
probably
said,
made a play for
exactly.
the number three pick.
But Houston said, okay, if that is indeed the case, this is what they probably said. I'm not 100% sure about this. I'm not. But once they found that out, they said, okay, let's do this. Let's take Stroud, because we want him anyway, but we're going to wait to get him, possibly after getting Will Anderson. But let's get Stroud now, because it's not going to cost us as much in draft capital to get Will Anderson.
But it still costs a lot.
It still cost him, but not as much.
But either way, if they wanted Stroud, they had to take him at two.
Yes, because there were other players, right?
Right. I could have told you 2 months ago that if you want Stroud, you better take him at two. And that was true all along, as long as we believe that Bryce Young was going to be the first pick.
But the stuff that had been coming out this month,
it's all noise. Everything that's been coming out, there's a ton of stuff that's been coming out.
We had to
listen
to it
all. There's a lot of BS. There's a lot of stuff that might be true. It's all noise.
Yeah, we don't.
Exactly. So we had to listen to it, and we had to comment on it.
So I take it all into one big bubble. There's a bunch of noise, and you have to decipher that internally.
No, you're right.
But at the end of the day, you're sitting there going, okay, do I want to risk losing one of these players by letting one of them slip? No, I'm making the move. I have the ability, because I have the 12th pick. I have a ton of picks. because the Browns are idiots and they traded us a whole haul for a guy that was never going to play for us anyway. So they did a pretty good job to get all that stuff. And they said, okay, let's pay the insurance and let's get the two guys we want to get. But if we don't take C.J. Stroud at two, we will not have C.J. Stroud.
And you're absolutely, you could be right, but you're making the argument for us that they felt that if they didn't take him at two, that even though there was a possibility of them moving up to three, they wouldn't have gotten him because they probably would have gotten outbid. So they said, well, we're going to take Stroud at two, then we'll take Will Anderson at three because we know there's no bidding war for Will Anderson.
You don't know that.
But obviously it wasn't because they were able to move up and nobody else.
They paid a lot to get Will Anderson.
The Titans removed. Okay, what do you think? It's going to take more for me to get a franchise quarterback or defensive end?
It's probably a little bit more for the quarterback.
Okay,
but that's
what I'm saying, Willie.
Yes, but you had to take Stroud at two. That's my point.
You didn't have to take him.
The Anderson thing is a separate thing.
No, it's
once
the same
Stroud
thing.
Is off the board, the Titans are out of the mix. You had to. They had to do it the way they did it.
Exactly. You are making the point, Willie.
Because they knew that the Titans wanted to take C.J. Stroud.
Willie, you're making the point.
If it weren't the Titans, it could have been somebody else.
It could have been anybody else.
It could have been anybody else, but they had to do that.
You can't take that risk.
Okay, so
no, you're
Willie.
Assuming that only when they found out the Titans were interested. That's what you guys are saying. These are assumptions, just like yours.
You can't say it's not true, Willie, because they're assumptions, just like yours is an assumption, right? Okay.
No, I'm just saying who controls the cards? The Texans. It's got nothing to do with it. The Titans were trying to work without the – you just mentioned the Spades reference.
Yeah.
Okay, they didn't have the hand. They didn't have the little joker and the big choker. The Texans had all the spades.
Houston had the big joker.
Yes, and they had the little joker. And they utilized them to play the hand that safely got them the two players they wanted to. And it cost them a little bit.
Houston had the little joker in the two. The Titans had the big joker. The Titans, they wanted
to have the big joker. They picked 11.
No.
These analogies are making a lot more sense. No, no. What I'm saying, the rules of this game.
The analogy is the Titans had the big joker. Houston had the little joker and the two, which is the two is the trump card, which is the joker, joker, deuce, okay? I know the Titans have the big joker. I need to play this small joker right now just to win it because
the point is you had the cards.
Yeah,
you had the advantage. You had the upper hand over the Titans.
But I don't have the advantage if I don't play it.
Right. That's what I'm saying. You had to play it. You're making my point. If you want your guy, you got to play it right there.
But what if I wanted to wait?
If you want to wait, you take the risk. You take the risk.
It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad?
One texter texts in and says, you take the quarterback before anyone else. You take the more valuable asset first. That is making an assumption that the Texans valued C.J. Stroud more than Will Anderson.
Exactly.
Which is something that I do not believe. But it is time for Ask D-Mace. So we'll get into Ask D-Mace coming up next. Get your questions in for D-Mace, 615-737-1025. Caroline Lee, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game.
D-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
Quick throw. Touchdown, Derek Mason.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards.
Midfield, and there he goes. 80 yards for the touchdown.
And now you can ask him anything. Have a question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now on Caroline, Willie, and
D-Mace.
On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app.
Ask D-Mace. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace. Get those questions in for D-Mace. Calls, text 615-737-1025. On this draft day two, after quite a spicy day one, Nate is on the line with a question for D-Mace. What's up, Nate?
What's up, y'all? So, D-Mace, with someone that is apparently highly touted like Will Levis, if you are there for the draft and you don't get picked in the first round, but, you know, you went to the draft, what are you thinking after day one?
Thank you for your call, Nate. Thank you for the question. There's a lot of feelings that has to be swirling around in Will Levis's head. I mean,
poor guy.
You know, from embarrassment, frustration, stressed out, name anything in a sort of high-pressure situation that you will feel, or a situation that you have no control over, but you're sitting there and you know the whole world is watching you. Because I'm pretty sure that he watched possibly the draft of Johnny Manziel and some of these other quarterbacks, Geno Smith, when they got drafted when he was, Will Levis is probably about 10, 12 years old, and watching those and thinking like, man, I don't want to be in that position ever. That's not going to be. And then you find yourself in that same exact position. Honestly, to me, the NFL need to do away with it. Invite guys. If they come, they come. But just still have a big party. Invite a bunch of alumni guys, because this stuff is going to happen more times than not moving forward. You inviting. That's why they sort of limited it to the as many guys as they did, because before there were a bunch of guys that would come to the draft. Now they've cut the number down. I think they just need to do away with it, period. Or just bring, guys, maybe five guys that you know will be drafted in day one. Because that has to be frustrating, stressful, embarrassing, where you got to sit there. And it's almost like you got to save face in front of the whole world. The smiles and the laughs I saw, those were like frustration smiles. It was almost forced. And his family was doing a good job at trying to lighten up the mood for him and everything. And that's what they're supposed to do, How can you watch somebody that you love sit there and just kind of go through that stressful situation? So the smiles and the laughs, they were all just like a facade.
It's like when you are watching an awards show and
exactly.
They pan to the loser and they're smiling and clapping.
Exactly.
Which, I have to give credit to Will Levis. He really did. Mm-hmm. He didn't look visibly frustrated. And I guess when there's cameras shoved in your face, you really do have to play it cool. But that's tough. That's really hard.
Yeah.
That's really hard. It's a little bit of an ego shock there. Right back into your questions for D-Mace coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, and tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight at 6:35 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds take on the Omaha Storm Chasers, the AAA affiliate of the Kansas City Royals tonight. They'll take on the Storm Chasers on Saturday at 6:35 and Sunday at 2:05 to finish up the series. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
G-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
Quick throw. Touchdown, Derek Mason.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards.
Midfield, and there he goes. 80 yards for the touchdown.
And now you can ask him anything. Have a question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now on Caroline, Willie, and
D-Mace.
On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Ask D-Mace. Get those questions in for D-Mace. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Taking your calls, taking your texts, any question that you might have for Mr. Derek Mason. One texter texts in and says, what do you think the trade package was for the Tennessee Titans, and would you have been okay with giving up those assets for number three?
I don't know. Obviously, it wasn't enough, or it maybe could have been. But once Stroud was off the board, it was like, okay, we're going to rescind our offer and we'll stay put at 11. So I'm sure to move up to that 11th spot, it was going to take swapping up first rounds this year, a second this year, and possibly your fifth, and then a second next year that can potentially be a first as well. And they probably was ready to go with a deal sort of in that ballpark. But then once CJ Stroud got taken at second, they were like, we don't like, these other quarterbacks so much so that we need to move up in the draft to get them. So, we're going to rescind our offer and, kind of go that way. So, but if CJ Stroud was still there, and if that's your guy, and I've said it before, if everyone's in on the same page, if there's a consensus in the room that this is our guy, then you do whatever you need to do to go up and get him. That's what you do.
And so Houston gave up They swap picks this year, number one next year, a third round, not number one, first round next year, third round next year, and a second round this year. So I would say that would be the floor for what the Titans would have to give up for three, because they would be competing with Houston and maybe any other teams that would be in the mix for number three. And the idea of would you be okay with it, totally fair question. That's difficult to answer now, because now it's like, eek, no first rounder next year. I don't know. So many questions. 5 years from now, if CJ Stroud was a Super Bowl MVP, we'd say, yeah, screw those picks. We didn't care what the return was. We didn't care what we had to give up in order to get him.
But also you can say, okay, if you would have put together that package and say you got CJ Stroud, you had to give up a number one for next year. Why are people so concerned about that number one next year? Because if you believe in your team and your coach, it's going to be a bottom of the first round pick anyway. And, you know, you, whatever guy you're getting at,
you think they're
going to
be a contender next year?
29. I'm just saying if they were. Ideally. I don't think they're going to be bad, but, I mean,
they're going to need a first round pick next year.
I don't think they're going to necessarily need one, because this is a process. They're not going to fill all their holes this year. They're just not. And it might not be next year. This is a process that's going to take two to three years to get that team back to where they want it or where it once was. So to me, if you're picking 28th, that's just an extension of the second round. As long as I possibly still have my second round pick and some other picks, I probably can trade those picks up and get back in the first round if I need to. Or I can trade a player or something and get picks and gather picks. So it's not just, oh, I'm giving away my – we can't give – oh, no, we can't give away our first round pick. No, many people have done it. You just need to make sure your team is in a position that if you do give up that first round pick for the next following year, then – you're a winning ball club, because if you're not a winning ball club, then that, you know, first round pick may be in the top 10 and it may theoretically cost you, or you may regret it. But if it's 28, you think they're going to regret it if their quarterback is working out the way they wanted him to?
I don't think you can ever undervalue first round picks and guys that you can get in the first round, really at any point in the draft. But to that point, if you're, you know, consistently making the playoffs or you go far in the playoffs, so much so that you're picking 28, 29, 30, then yeah, you feel good about your investment. Mm-hmm. Remember, the best question for D-Mace will win a pair of tickets to see the Outlaw Music Festival at First Bank Amphitheater on September 10th. Concert will feature Willie Nelson, Bobby Weir, and Wolf Brothers, Los Lobos, and Particle Kid. So get those questions in for D-Mace. Back to your phones. Ike is on the line with a question for D-Mace. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What's up, Ike?
Hey, how you guys doing? And ladies, I got a question. You know, what do you think about Toombs later on, maybe in the third round? You know, he's I've checked out his film. He's really a decent quarterback. Everybody's fighting over Levi and talking about that. None of the later quarterbacks are getting credit.
Which quarterback is that?
Toombs from Houston.
Thanks for your call, Ike.
Thanks for your call, Ike. I didn't. I haven't followed Tune. Oh, my mic wasn't. I didn't think my mic was working. I haven't followed Tune. I haven't. He hasn't been on my radar at all out of Houston. The only guy I've really watched out of Houston was Nathaniel Dale, Tank Dell, the receiver. But, I mean, any other receiver out there, meaning any other quarterback out there, there's still Will Levis and Hendon Hooker left. And there's about a handful of quarterbacks that will get drafted. Maybe not today, but you know, more than likely tomorrow. But I think they're the run on quarterbacks, other than the first top three guys, I think it's gonna happen somewhere around this second and third round, where you'll start to see Levis and Hendon Hooker, and I'm hoping my boy Stetson Bennett go as well. But I think you'll start seeing a run on these quarterbacks, second and third round. But unfortunately, I haven't, you know, followed or really scouted Houston's quarterback.
Yeah, Clayton Toon, I don't think he's projected to be to go until maybe fourth, fifth, sixth round. I think he at least he's graded as a late round as projected to be a backup in the league. Of course, we know with the Brock Purdy example, anything can happen. But yeah, I don't know too much about Clayton Toon. Okay, one texter texts in about this that I'm just now seeing on Twitter. Antonio Brown signing with the Ravens.
Is
that
he?
Sounds like something that is cooked up by Antonio Brown.
Yeah, I saw the tweet. Well, the retweet, the story, and then a retweet. I saw him with a picture of him in a Ravens sort of. It was a Photoshop picture,
right,
of him with the black and purple on 84. Him making muscles, flexing. So I don't know if there's any truth to it or not. You know, nowadays, you know, guy like Antonio Brown, it's draft day. Maybe he just wants some attention and throws it out there. But that has not been on anyone's radar in regards to, you know, Antonio Brown signing with NFL team, let alone the Baltimore Ravens.
I saw a tweet that said Antonio Brown signing with the Ravens. The Ravens just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
I think
that may be the case.
I think this is the next chapter of the Antonio Brown saga.
Maybe it's not the Baltimore Ravens. Maybe it's a different, like a Pop Warner team? Or adult
league? That's not a USFL.
The USFL?
Is there an arena expansion league team? I don't know.
Maybe the Baltimore Orioles?
Yeah.
Could be switching over to baseball.
I don't know what it is. I mean,
I will say AB keeps things interesting for us.
He does. He keeps himself in the news somehow, some way. And the stuff that has surrounded him, I can't see an organization like the Baltimore Ravens, because this guy hadn't played football in over a year.
They're smart.
And their stuff, you know, just every time something always coming out. And I'm not saying it's true, because I don't know, and it's just speculation, but things keep coming out about Antonio Brown. I can't see the Baltimore Ravens then say, hey, Antonio, come on over, you know. And knowing what you did in Tampa, oh, come on over. Come on over to our franchise.
Stripping down your britches.
Exactly. I can't see Bisciotti doing that, no.
Jared and Dixon Texan says, so we know that Ryan Tannehill is our starter for at least this year. It seems when you were in the league, did you get with McNair and did you build a bond and purposely make it a point to hang out and get to know each other really well, spend a lot of time with each other so that chemistry was higher on the football field so that it would benefit the team more?
It was much different back then. We spent so much time together as a team. In camps, these camps, we had to be there more times than not. And voluntary camp back then wasn't voluntary. It was voluntary, but you better be here. That's what it was. And guys were there. So we spent a lot of time. And obviously, we spent time together off the field as well. It wasn't like we were together every weekend. Well, we were during the season because we had to play. But after the season, guys would get away, and they had families too. So you would get together whenever you could or an event, something like that. But we built our bond and our rapport on the field because, again, we had a lot of time. We spent a lot. I saw probably from May, probably earlier than that, April, until January, I probably spent more time with the team than I did with my family, you know, because we had to spend so much time there that, especially during camp, for 2 weeks you didn't see them because you didn't go home, you know, more than likely didn't go home. But even during the season, you get up at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning, everybody's still asleep. You leave out the house by 6, everybody's still asleep or just getting ready to get up. And by the time you come home, it's like 6 or 7 o'clock. The kids getting ready to go to bed. Everybody's kind of winding their day down. So you really, and then you're going to bed like 4 hours later. So you're not getting to spend that time. You spend more time with the guys in a locker room, you know, than you do with your family for a portion of the year.
I have to give so much credit. Players, coaches, GMs, front office members, I mean, they're sleeping at the facility. Mm-hmm. Players are in practice all the time, and their significant others, their kids, their parents, you know, their entire families. A lot of time you spend away from them. That's easy. It's the same goes for every sport. When you're on the road, when you're in the training room, I mean, it's a lot of time that you mm-hmm. dedicate to your craft. And while it's fun to watch, make a lot of money doing it, you know, you're in the lights and the cameras and you have the fame, mm-hmm. there's a price to pay for it as well.
Oh, yeah.
Ask D. Mace. Thanks to everybody for sending in those questions for D. Mace. So we've got a lot of discussion about what the Titans could have done. Let's get into what the Titans actually did. Peter Skoronski, offensive lineman out of Northwestern, taken at 11 overall by the Tennessee Titans. We'll give our thoughts on it and take your thoughts on it as well. Caroline Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.